packaging has become part of the brand a lot more than it used to be, which is a real strength of the story that's been told with the brand and not just the packaging itself.
What kind of cardboard box?
What's in the box?
It loses its value if you take it out of the packaging.
Hey, BDU crew, today we're speaking of Richard Dancy and Chris Schoenfield. They're part of Colorform, a plastic-free alternative to creating custom luxury packaging. Now, we've all experienced molded fiber. Usually, it's a replacement for foam or plastic inserts. Even though the team at Colorform can make inserts with their eyes closed, Colorform is truly at the forefront of design and innovation with this material. Now, you're going to walk away with three major things today. Number one, you're going to discover that molded fiber can be so much more than inserts. We get into so many possibilities that, I mean, it's awesome. We talk about everything that you can possibly make with this stuff. And I hope you get some ideas from this and change your view of molded fiber. Number two, we're going to talk about how molded fiber works. I know a lot of times designers love seeing this material. They love seeing samples of it, but they really don't know how to get started. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about the process, the materials. We're even going to run some numbers, some rough numbers, because molded fiber isn't a cheap process. But what Colorform does is they make sure that their packaging solutions add value to the unboxing. Listen especially to the part where we talk about Ruinart and their molded fiber wrap. I mean, this thing has changed the brand completely, and it's just molded fiber. Number three, how sustainable packaging doesn't have to be Kraft and granola. I mean, there are brands out there that are pushing the boundaries of what it means to develop easy to recycle packaging, as well as helping brands define their place in the circular economy. Also, we watch a video here, which you can't see, obviously, but you can check out the episode on YouTube and see it there, or you can just go to Colorform's website and watch it there on your own time. It's pretty amazing, and they've got a lot of other examples on their site, so definitely check them out. Listen to the episode, then do me a favor, subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. I'm giving away two t-shirts to my favorite reviewers. It doesn't matter if you tell me you love the podcast or you hate the podcast. I'm just looking for honesty. But do me a favor, hit review, let me know what you think. Now let's get to the show. We got Chris Schoenfield and Richard Dancy from Colorform, which is, I understand this correctly, it's a part of James Cropper Paper. And if you know me, I'm a huge fan of Cropper. So Richard, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. How are you guys doing today?
Yeah, we're good. Thank you. Yeah, very good.
Awesome. So can you give us just a quick brief introduction to who you are, Richard, as well as Chris, and then we can get into what is Colorform?
Sure. Okay, I'll go first. So my name is Richard Dancy, and I'm the brand manager for Colorform. We're actually a separate business, but we fall under the James Cropper PLC group. So we're part of the James Cropper family that's been running for 176 years now, with expertise in paper and color and fiber and all that. And the Colorform is our latest innovation, and we started about 5 years ago. And it's a thermoformed molded fiber product. So we can create pretty much anything you want in molded fiber, as Chris will tell you, within reason, within the designer's ability. It's a really exciting product. It's as the name suggests, it, you know, take color and form and create what you want for your brand. And it's a plastic free, of course, I guess it goes without saying, it's a sustainably conscious plastic free product.
Yeah.
And how about you, Chris? What role do you play within Colorform?
Yeah, Chris Schoenfield. Yeah, I head the design team, the product design team, and some of the mechanical, technical side as well within Colorform, James Cropper. I've been here sort of from its inception on the design side, creating 3D designs. I won't go over again what Richard said, but I will say from a material point of view, it's a really interesting material to work with. It's obviously sustainable. That's a feel-good factor. It's also, it's a very tactile material, and creating the moldings, the parts from it, it's amazing how many shapes and features that we can add to these parts that enhance the packaging, but also enhance the product. And that's what we do and try to do, not to just inspire the clients, of course, but inspire their clients, their customers too.
So how is Colorform different than other molded fiber?
I think the history of James Cropper, the 175 years or more now, the color part is that their skill to be able to create and copy, mimic any color that's given to us, either in paper or in this case within color form. And the form part being obviously the 3D shapes and moldings that we can create from that. We know the color stands, we stand apart with the color. That's the skill. that's now, you know, it, within deep within James Cropper, and the shape, the design, that too, we like to think we are breaking new ground with it, with every new design.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Chris. I would say the design is at the forefront of everything that we do, and we work with designers, or we have, as Chris heads up the design team, we have our own design team. Everybody understands that packaging can be folding boxes or bags or whatever, but actually with molded fiber, with color form, you can have any shape. You can have real complexity, real beauty, real texture. It is completely different. And the biggest challenge for us is to widen people's idea of what is possible and inspire people, if you like, to make them challenge their own brand as to what they can do with packaging in a sustainable way, which is kind of always in the background. But the design is actually more important.
We find with the design, almost every time we discuss it initially with the client, we're educating them, be the director of the client or a designer, on what's possible within process and the material, of course, with Colourform. And obviously they're educating us what they require. So we do inspire them by giving them lots of ideas beyond what they may even have imagined they could have in for their product. That's the word we use a lot, is inspiring them, inspiration. We're trying to draw that out to the realize what's possible.
Sure.
And that's our goal too, of course.
Yeah, of course. And I think if we get to the basic point here with Colourform, or just the basic idea behind Colourform, is that you are, I mean, the product is beautiful. And I've got samples here that you guys sent me. You know, the one piece I think we've all seen online is this Rionart bottle casing, which, you know, had never been done before. Nobody's ever done a pack for a bottle like this.
I have one with a bottle.
No, sorry, that's perfect. But
you don't have the champagne.
You didn't send me the champagne.
sorry about that.
Yeah, so you've got this. It's a single piece. You know, it unfolds. So it molds in this fashion. You know, it demolds. You've got this locking feature that happens on the side here with a little button on it. And if you get like real close up, you can see there's the R from the logo. I mean, all the detail that went into this is amazing. One, you've won a tremendous number of awards around this product. When I look at this and I look at the other types of molded fiber that are out there, right? So when a designer looks at molded fiber, you're definitely used to seeing molded fiber for eggs, right? A dozen eggs comes in that molded fiber. That is molded fiber. You know, when you get your iPhone and you remove your phone from the box, the insert is a really smooth molded fiber. And those are two ends of the spectrum, right? Is this high fidelity molded fiber, and then you've got this low quality molded fiber on either end. And then you have something as beautiful as the Rionart wrap, which is in a completely different side of the spectrum. It's neither on this hi-fi, super crisp edges, or this really rough, like you've created this locking feature, which has never existed before. The inside is completely smooth. And then the outside has sort of a leather-like texture that you've created. So what is the process for somebody to design something like this? You know, you say people want to do the Rionart wrap. They want to do something similar without innovating beyond this. What are the first steps? How does somebody begin this path?
I guess now the technical parts have been dealt with then, and we could talk for quite a while on the how that evolved, the evolution of that part, because we kept adding and the client kept adding detail to it as we went along. For example, you mentioned the texture. The texture was to mimic the cellar walls of the wine cellars, and that's what we created there. And we'd never done that before. It's a very elaborate embossed detail. But as you say, it's a texture all throughout the product of the entire surface. So that's just one example, the catch and the detail of that and the function side. So it's considering the design, and in that form, it was very sort of what's sort of very organic, very sculptured shape, but still functional, rather than just being, for example, the mobile phone, the cell phone trays, for example, they're very technical, they serve a purpose. And like we mentioned before, there's sort of replace the plastic part in the past. There's a sort of opposite ends of the spectrum in a sense of function, and then this one's got function, fit, and obviously it's got form. So where do we start with the customer? They may say they want something similar to that. They may have a good idea what they do want. It could be anything from spirit brands, champagne, wine, colognes, etc. What we will do we'll take the thoughts from them. They're never in great detail, not much detail. And one of the first things we do is research the brand, as we all would do as designers. And we look what we can bring out. We look at the product, obviously, what's going in it. And we look at that, and then we look at the brand, and we think, what can we do? What can we enhance on that design and use within the product design? Obviously, this is alongside its technical function. What does it need to do? What's their expectation of this wrap? In that case, that wrap of Ruina is offering some protection, but what you can't see, it's offering the UV protection that's part of its composition. You can't see that in its shape, obviously. So we have to look at what's required of it. What we try and, back to the Ruina wrap, is give it the shelf presence, something that it doesn't require. Keep it minimal. Try not to have it. The primary packaging is the bottle. It contains the champagne. The secondary is the wrap. We don't want to go any further. We don't want to. The customer may do, but if we can encourage it doesn't need it, it's less packaging overall. Obviously, more sustainable overall. So there's lots of things we bring into it to try and encourage that. And we always say, same design. You know this yourself. You show them a design of something and they don't know they want it or do or don't want it till you've shown them it, and then they can decide if they like to go down that route or they don't want to go down that route. So we try and offer choices of what is possible. It's a joint, what's the term I'd use, discussion, consultation on to get to the end point. And that's when I mentioned at the start, we're educating the client on what's possible with the process and material, and they're educating us on their brand and what their requirements are.
What we're doing is elevating the packaging into something that's telling a story for the brand. As Chris said, it has the primary functions that it requires. So, for example, with the Ruinard bottle, it's protecting the bottle. It's protecting champagne from light. It's also able to go into an ice bucket for long enough for people to enjoy it and drink it without it falling apart. I think it's up to 3 hours or something. So you've got all those standard things that packaging needs to do. But then we're able to tell the story of the brand as well. So as Chris says, the texture of the chalk caves where the cellars are in France, in the Champagne region. And with our Inspire collection, I know you've seen that, some of the ideas that we have there also take the essence of the brand of the product that we're showing and brings the story through and tells it. That's what people are looking for. The Ruinard bottle is able to show, have real shelf presence. You know, we were able to travel recently in duty free. There was loads of different boxes of champagne. And then this, and your eyes just drawn to this straight away. It tells a different story just by sitting there. So I think that's a really important part.
International Direct Packaging is the only factory direct packaging manufacturer with global showrooms. They design and produce packaging for established luxury brands. Because IDP's team of packaging experts design and manufacture packaging, you get a more transparent supply chain, and you're also not going to be paying distributor markups. Find the nearest IDP showroom to schedule your first packaging consultation at idpdirect.com. Because IDP doesn't source factories, they are the factory. idpdirect.com. Stay up to date with package design news. Join me, Evelio Matos, Corey Connors, and Adam Peake every Monday at 7:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on LinkedIn Live for the package design news. 15 minutes of the latest in packaging news. See you there. Check out SpecRite, the number one platform for specification management. Not sure what board your box uses? Not sure how many colors or how much headspace your packaging requires? If you don't SpecRite, you'll guess wrong. SpecRite.com. You make a great point in terms of just one, breaking that shelf presence, right? Where everybody else is on in a rigid box or a standard bottle. When you've got something like this molded fiber and you've got a bottle next to it, you've got glass next to it or a rigid box, which is angled, this shape, the light bounces off of it differently. It absorbs light. It reflects light. You get all these different shadows happening. So immediately your eye's drawn to this area that is almost like a calm section of the shelf. That's your first victory. I think when you're doing any type of packaging, if you can break the norm of the shelf, that's your first victory. You've drawn people's eyes to that section. Now there's the tactile quality of that texture, which you mentioned mirrors the texture in the storage areas, like that it's a really beautiful texture. You know, you're drawn to it. You want to feel it. You're like, well, what is that? So you want to grab it. And if you get the consumer to grab it, then that's another victory, right? And all these little victories that you're checking off up until you walk that customer to the checkout counter. And then that's the ultimate victory, right? Is you can get the packaging to make them actually purchase the product.
Sure. And I think that the story for this, Abelio, is demonstrated by the way that the brand actually advertises this now with the packaging. They didn't do that as much when they had the boxes, but now you'll see they'll show this, they'll serve this in high-end restaurants and so on. The beauty of the top here was designed to mimic the waiter with his towel or serviette around the bottle as it's served. And it's really become part of the brand. The packaging has become part of the brand a lot more than it used to be, which is a real strength of the story that's been told with the brand and not just the packaging itself.
If you're a designer out there, a packaging designer that's listening to this, I think the one thing you can take away from this, just this one small conversation we've had so far, is molded fiber doesn't have to be an insert. That's where everybody's mind goes. I've got EVA, I got an EVA foam insert, I need to replace it. Molded fiber. I got a PVC insert. I want to replace it. Molded fiber. But you've taken the fiber out of the box and just made it the pack. So the process for whether it's this or anything else that I'm molding, you mentioned, Richard, this was a thermoform fiber. So getting back to the basics, what does that mean? What is thermoform? If somebody doesn't know what that is, how do you explain that in simple terms?
I normally say it's a really posh egg box. That doesn't do it justice.
It is a really posh egg box. If you described, you know, one aspect to the other extreme of the fiber molding, it's starting with the tool, the actual part. It's match tooling. It's very accurately manufactured match tooling with very accurate clearances, heat and pressure applied, and from doing that, we can maintain and create the accuracy of the product. So we're fitting the product, we're fitting its tolerances. That's where the product starts. Around this really accurate tooling. The process can go through different stages. In our case, it goes through three stages, from the liquid forming stage, the forming stage where we create it, to pressing stations or pressing stages, where we create the form or the mat from the pulp, and then we press it, we fine tune it with the press, with a little bit more clearance, and we fine tune it again down to anywhere between, a thickness we work on average 0.8 of a millimeter. We may go to down to 0.6, and we can even achieve 1.5, but that's quite thick for the product on timings. So it's a very accurately controlled process. The starting point is the tool, the accuracy of the tool that creates the parts. And the fiber, like paper making or similar, is carried in the water, of course, at the outset. That is around 99% water. And the pulp gets, you know, removed from that during that forming stage. The whole of that in our process goes from a cycle time, let's just say on average a minute, in about 5.5 meters of machine. So it's magical to watch.
So Chris, if you were to explain what you just said to a 5-year-old, how would you explain this process?
Yeah, how do I explain it to a 5-year-old?
You start with this mushy slurry, which is the fiber and water.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd sieve out the filter out, sieve out, I'm not sure we said to a 5-year-old, but sieve out some of the fiber, the colored fiber in our case, out of the liquid, the water, so its carrier. And you'd move it from that mold to another mold where it's a two-sided mold where the first one starts to form the shape. We then press into the shape. So if we think of it to the 5-year-old as a two-sided jelly mold, that's basically what we're creating. We're filtering the fiber and we start to create, in the first pressing station, we'll fine tune it a little bit. In the last pressing station, we'll give it more accuracy. We'll fine tune it again. And the jelly mold, biscuit mold, etc., well, it's mimicking the shape. The shape is mimicking the mold, obviously, it comes out of there.
That first jelly mold, you've got two pieces. You've got the male and the female. Does the female version of that mold, does that have a screen in it to push the liquid out? Or how do you get the liquid out at that stage?
It has venting in it. So the first form, it's still liquid and it's drawn out of it, it's drained out of it. and then under some pressure. The next two stages, because there's heat and pressure applied, so it does two things. It presses it out, and it also turns it to steam, and it's evacuated, it's drawn out as steam. It's drying it through the process. It comes off the end of the line, the end of the machine, around about, I don't know, 3-4% moisture content. So it's practically dry.
Does that texture that comes off that first mold, does that look like an egg carton?
Off the first stage, yes, because it's one-sided. And then as soon as it goes into the male and female jelly molds, restorations, it then becomes formed on both sides. With this product, there's a primary and secondary surface. It's the nature of the product where the material reacts and shrinks from the mold. So we do pride ourselves, our secondary surface actually is very, very good. And our primary surface, if you've seen it, hopefully from the product you mentioned, it is obviously exceptional. Yeah, the room in our product. So the inside, we mentioned it's smooth. That's the secondary surface. So you can see the quality we can achieve from that. And the material, with it being a male and female, is a constant thickness throughout. Unless we slightly design it differently to do something different, it is generally the constant thickness throughout the product.
If you're watching this video, this is the shape of the mold. You know, it comes in, it presses it out, it moves into the next stage, then that shape goes into the next mold, which is essentially identical, but it's much more refined. Then you're applying heat to one side of it. So essentially you're ironing the outside of your shirt.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, then, then you flip the shirt over. Now on the third phase, then you're ironing the inside of your shirt.
Yeah, it's an ironing, it's removing the water and fine tuning.
Perfect. So with those three phases, now if I'm a designer, I'm a brand, and I want to work with you, obviously I have to buy three different molds or six different molds, right? Male and female set for each one of those phases. What does something like that run? A lot of times people are thinking, well, I want to order 1,000 inserts. 1,000 inserts, three gigantic molds is probably not the right customer for you, I would assume. What are general costs around molds like that? And to what's the right customer for you? You know, what are the quantities that they need to be working with?
Quite right. If it's a low volume, the question is, we're talking packaging in this case, is it affordable? Likely not to be. So we have to talk in the tens and thousands. So a full tool set can be, of course, we're talking pounds here, of course, can be say around 25,000 to 50,000 pounds. It's a very broad range, depending on its complexity, of course. And when you look at that figure, you then say, well, what's the volume going through there to justify that cost for that tool? Then, of course, we've got to look at the product itself and how that runs, what its cycle time is. So it's machine time, basically, and how much does it cost us to produce? So yes, that's where you're quite right. The low volumes do not lend themselves in packaging terms to the product. But we do deal with customers with products that are in, say, 20,000 up to millions. But I guess, what's an average, Richard? 200,000, 250? I mean, if there is an average.
Yeah, I don't, like you said, every project's different, so that there isn't really an average. I know what we are doing is moving to more complexity, and every project is challenging us more. So I guess right at the beginning, we were looking at, like you said, inserts and molds for secondary packaging, whereas now it's more complex and it's more detailed. So yeah, we're looking for a sweet spot, although we wish we could show you more stuff because we've got amazing stuff, but we can't show you it. We've got quite low quantities for customers who just, you know, their products are beautiful and they have a bigger budget. And then I feel that the industry itself is waking up to what we can provide. And therefore, we have a lot of brands putting their toe in the water with some things that actually price is not the most important consideration right now. You know, a lot of our customers have sustainability plans and commitments. And, you know, we just had COP26 here in the UK. The first consideration is not always the cost. It's the beauty, it's the brand, it's the challenge of what they can do to be more sustainable. So they might start a project whereby it's going to lead to much bigger things. yeah, cost is not, it's important, of course, and value and all those good things. But actually, what they can achieve is more important.
Just one more thing to that. We've noticed in the 5 years a shift change from replacing the plastic inserts and trays to becoming the more sculptured works of art that we say with pride, actually. We don't say that with pride. We're trying to create that work of art, that that shelf presence. And we see the customers seeing that. They follow that, in what Richard's description there, how they start to appreciate why, if they want that, they've got that goal, that's what they have to do to achieve it. That's what it has to be to achieve it. Yeah, there is a definite shift change from replacing to it being something within its own right.
We're in a world of change, aren't we? There's people who've got to try stuff. You know, if you look at any big organization of worth, will have sustainable ECG credentials that they've committed by 2030 to do this and by 2040 to do this. And they're not going to get there unless they try things and they work on products such as Colourform. And that we've noticed as well really step up. Of course, that's why we're here, but that's really stepped up in the last few years.
You know, I think the big point is if somebody's looking to replace a molded fiber or a molded EVA tray or a PVC tray and become more sustainable, they can definitely contact Colourform. You guys are 100% capable of doing that. But really, if you're going to spend the money on the molds and you're going to spend the time to design a replacement for something, you know, as a designer, I would much rather see these brands trying to push design with your team. And yeah, it might cost a little bit more, but if you can create a pack, you know, like the Ruinart, which then becomes a big part of the brand, it's not just a replacement. It now is part of the experience, part of how they're serving it, part of how customers are displaying it. The value on, you know, the return on that investment far outweighs just replacing another insert, right? Because anybody can replace an insert. As a designer that loves packaging, I want to see more cutting edge packaging out there. You know, and you guys did send out some cool samples to me. This, you know, bottle form here, you know, which could be for a fragrance, could be for anything else. You know, it's just a really simple lock that happens on the side of it. You know, you get this really cool shape, these textures. You know, you've got them in different colors. So being part of James Cropper, do you share manufacturing? You know, does the pulp from, do you guys buy pulp, buy the pulp in bulk? Say that 10 times fast. Do you guys buy the pulp in bulk? Do you guys produce that together? How does that work? How do you guys collaborate?
So we're able to share and rely on the heritage of James Cropper for sure, as we mentioned. So our technical laboratory that we have on site, we use together, and we have Colourform technical specialists and we have James Cropper paper technical specialists. We pull on the same expertise, and so that's shared. Also the pulp, so we have a recycled fiber plant that uses coffee cups. So our cup cycling is also world renowned for its innovation and the fact that, you know, coffee cups are a really fantastic quality fiber source. But it's just really tricky to remove that plastic film that's on the inside. So we do that. And our recycled fiber plant is used both by James Cropper Paper and by Colourform. And there's all sorts of examples like that. You know, James Cropper has a reputation for innovation, and our technology and innovation department was the birthing place of Colourform. And also we have a division called Technical Fiber Products that works in the hydrogen cell, fuel cell market, also wind turbines, aircraft, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's a non-woven technical fiber product. It's similar, but actually it's very, very different. It's a different market. It's not packaging. That sort of heritage and resource. Well, we're all on the same site. We do have sites all around the world, but the main production site is here just on the outskirts of the UNESCO World Heritage English Lake District. All the water that we use is pulled from the reservoir just up the road and comes down naturally and is returned back to the water source cleaner than we took it out. So yeah, it's a combination of all of those things.
So let's talk about the water. That's the one thing that I hear a lot about. I think anytime I've shared like the Ruinart bottle packaging on LinkedIn or, you know, on social media, there's always some guy in plastics that says it's not really more sustainable than a plastic insert because of all the water that they use to produce that.
We have a lot of water in the district.
We're not in the desert like you, Emilio. There's plenty of water
right,
here.
Right. I mean, I'm in the middle of a major drought. But so tell me about that. So you pull the water out, the water comes out, you process the paper. What happens to that water? I mean, I'm assuming you clean it and reuse it. What happens to that water when we're talking about paper?
So yeah, we, as Chris said, up to 99% of it is water when it goes onto the machines. And then we will reuse a lot of the water within our own processes. But once we've made the paper, there's a lot of water that we need to treat and filter and clean. And then that goes back to the local authorities' water companies that we have here. We're actually in an area where I think there's crayfish in the River Kent, which just comes past here. So we have to be very careful. We have to be careful about the temperature of the water, about everything. We're very closely monitored as to any effects that we have on the environment. So we're uber aware of that. Yeah, as Chris said, luckily there's a constant source in one of the wettest parts of Europe, certainly of the UK. So I guess that's why we're here in the first place.
That's cool. Can I order, let's say I'm producing packaging in Asia or in North America, can I get Colorform products here and there, or do they have to be produced at your location?
It's all produced here. All Colorform products are produced in the UK. So our main clients are in Europe, although of course we do have customers that are global brands, so their stuff goes all around the world. But yeah, it is manufactured here in the UK.
Are there plans to expand beyond the UK, or is it pretty much that's it?
I'm not aware of any plans to expand outside of the UK.
Okay. So then just thinking through, if I'm producing packaging in Asia, then I just need, essentially if I'm working with a client in Europe and I'm producing packaging in Asia, I just need to be able to bring in my product into a fulfillment center, distribution center near, somewhere in Europe, that then the two components can be combined and then stay within Europe.
Yeah. I mean, we're able to offer a full service to customers. So from design all the way to printing and fulfillment, if that's what the customer wants. If the customer wants us to ship the packaging packed in the way that they want, obviously we work with the client and work out how's best to distribute that product, then we'll work with them and do that. But we've always got an eye on what is most efficient, really, I guess.
Awesome. So who internally is coming up with like the designs that you're promoting, like your new innovations? Who's working on that stuff? Because I'm looking at your catalog, right? I'm seeing these penguin-shaped bottle.
It's actually the Cropper Pouter Pigeon. And that was what I was talking about, the story of. So James Cropper, part of our heritage and actually our hallmark emblem, has the pigeon on it. And so Chris, in association with some of our designers, worked on that concept and said, how can we pull through the story of the James Cropper brand? Because, we're not licensed to use anyone else's brand, so let's use our brand for this particular example. How do you pull that through and not only protect the product, but tell a story as well, along the lines we talked about, Runa? That's that, where that came from.
Yeah, trying to show customers what else is possible than the traditional, as you described it. What makes them go within the outlet, the shop? It's something different. So we're trying to demonstrate what is possible. On the sample you have, this sample here, you'll see this is the demonstrator piece we produce purely for demonstration purposes. And it demonstrates, obviously, forms and the edge detail and the finishing. But you can see on the emblem or the pigeon on there, we're showing it emboss and deboss. So it's showing the accuracy as well of what's achievable. So it demonstrates quite a lot.
Can I print? I got this question yesterday from somebody that wanted to do a molded fiber piece. And, they said, we want to do a molded fiber, almost like a purse, right? That holds product here and here, and then it closes and you've got a handle on it and you walk away with it. But they're like, we want to print our logo on the outside of it. I haven't seen printing directly to molded fiber. I would assume it'd be like a pad print process, not a silkscreen process. But even that, I think, seems rather difficult. if not impossible. Have you seen that? Have you tried that?
It's not impossible. And so we have seen that, yes. And we would challenge people to ask us, we would ask people to challenge us to see what we can do. There's a number of different ways, like Chris says, of getting your message on the packaging. So you can emboss, you can deboss, you could cut, you could have it as part of the design. So I think on one of the examples in the Inspire collection, you've got the kiss. So that's actually showing there's no printing there at all. It's just two different molds pieced together post-production. So that's a really nice way of putting your brand through. And there's lots of different ways of doing it, whether it's a foiling or a printing or it is possible. It's just, what do you want to do and why do you want to do it and how many do you want to do and all those different questions.
The kiss example there showing, it's also showing that because when it's molded, obviously it has to be just, each mold is a single color. So we're mixing different moldings in that particular example and cutting through so you can see them coming through to get that. The contrast of colour. It's also demonstrating how we can double skin it or double layer it, which gives not only contrast of colour, but extra protection. So the outside shape can have something, contain something of a different shape inside, and it's got protection, extra padding of the two layers and the air between it to offer that, what you'd expect from packaging.
I'd love to show this video here as well, which is your video.
Yeah, so this is challenging what you can do with molded fiber. And this is showing it can be any shape, any size, any color. This is a lipstick. And, you know, but you could have it equally as a glasses case. It's turning into, it's got four different pieces there. It can be bigger and smaller. Having a bit of fun there with the different colors and shapes. Chris, please do add in anything.
So if I'm a brand and I want to add color to this, I'm paying for, you know, if we get back down to the financing and the paying for the molds, I'm paying just for one set of molds for this product. And then we're just funneling different colored fibers into these different areas. And if I've got four different colors mixed in these different components, I can mix and match and create, you know, dozens of variations of packaging that's completely sustainable, 100% recyclable, and it's got a great story behind it.
That's right. Yeah, just recycle with paper. Or also, as Chris said, some of the, I don't know whether we sent you the plinth the Poise bottle sits on. Yeah, Chris has got one in his hand here. So that's just another example to show you how solid it can be and how tough and how strong. So some of these items can be used again. Those lips, that kiss example, you know, that could just sit on your dressing table at home. You could store stuff in there. It doesn't even need to be thrown away. It's not single use. You know, it's something that can be reused. You know, we know the mantra of reduce, reuse, recycle. You know, that is part of the story that we're telling as well with these items.
This piece is really solid. Yeah, so there's this shape and then there's this depth here. So there's an air pocket in there which allows this some level of cushioning, which is great from transport. You know, in terms of transporting, if we can create some kind of cushion to deaden any kind of impact, how do you combine two pieces? Like I saw in the kiss and how we're seeing here, when you've got two separate pieces and you put those together, are those heat sealed or are they glued? How does that work?
They're glued. It's non-solvent glue and it's recyclable. It's a friendly glue. And it is applied under pressure, glued under pressure. And then in this case, it's then the edges finished whilst they are assembled together to give the very clean cut edge there. So they both match each other. We're not showing it here, but we could be showing this in two colours similar to this, which is really quite striking when you get a bead of colour. And you notice it just sits off the desk. So it looks like it's hovering slightly there as well. So you get the colour from the back if it is a duplex, a double colour.
Got it. So if the bottom piece was yellow, you know, mm-hmm. We can do that. And then if we wanted to, this piece here, we could cut out of the top insert and have the bottom one press through. So we'd have yellow showing through the top.
Exactly like the kiss example. Yes.
That's excellent, guy. I mean, this is really cool. I think, you know, a lot of times people don't know what they don't know, right? And when people want to start getting into molded fiber, the first thing they think of is going from a PVC tray or an EVA tray into molded fiber. I think it's a great first step. But it doesn't have to be the only step. you can take your molded fiber and actually create a piece of art from it. You know, your insert can capture your cell phone, but it doesn't mean that it has to be that same shape. We can create textures underneath it. We can combine materials. We can get color in there. You can just eliminate the box altogether and just make it all out of this, because this is solid enough to take that piece. It's completely recyclable. I think anybody that's interested in learning more about ColorForm and what's capable, and definitely watching some of the videos that you guys have on here, because you have some really good content. What's the website they should be going to find out more about ColorForm?
You can just go to colorform.co.uk, or you can go to jamescropper.com.
Excellent. And that's color.
We spell it with a U.
You guys don't want to get rid of that U. But
yeah, we won't get into the English versus American language. But yeah. We spell molded and fiber wrong as well, or differently. I'll say you guys spell it wrong, but right. We have a U in molded, and we have a RE for fiber.
What's very strange in engineering terms, some of the things I went through in engineering education was I spell them in the American way.
Oh, did you?
It's strange if sometimes it's how you're educated and you just do that. Not color, but some terms.
Yeah. I had a partner in Hong Kong that was educated in the UK. So, you know, anytime we write back and forth, it'd be molded with a U. Then I just pick that up. And then I'd start using the U, and I'd email somebody here in the US and I'm like, what does that mean? I don't even understand what that means. Yeah. So I've got this sample too. And again, you know, you can definitely make inserts, but you can change color. You can create all these different facets. There's just so much that you can do beyond just a white insert. You can create excitement. You can create a branded experience. You can create a product that will, you know, speak to the consumer and become part of the product and that unboxing experience all together with molded fiber. And the fact that you're really the only brand of molded fiber that exists, and you guys are leading the way in this space from a design and art and innovation standpoint. So
I think that color point is really important, because so many brands communicate via their color. And we know hundreds of brands that if you just show that specific color, we know straight away who it is, especially in the luxury market. And so with our color matching capability, the color lab here looks at what light it's under and matches to that, and where in the world it's going to be, and make sure that you communicate that. So that story part is very much, I know we've talked about design and form, but the colors is really important as well. One other thing to mention as well that we probably haven't touched on is the circularity story of paper and of fiber. And we find this in all James Cropper, is that you can put some of the story back into the product. So we have inclusions. I'm not sure whether we sent you one of the poisons with inclusions in it, but some, we have some organic, you know, it's only a small percentage, but perhaps in maybe your perfume or your drink or whatever has been produced using natural products, maybe plants or whatever. Some of them have actually been taking those, breaking them down, turning them into a flower or whatever, and putting them back into the packaging, into the product, which is another fantastic way to tell a story about your product and your brand, and that would normally just be discarded.
We do a packaging for a paper product, and some of their cutting room floor waste, let's call it, we use that as a percentage within making their packaging to package the product that was used to make the cutting room floor. So it is a complete circle. They do use it as part of their marketing. It's a great story.
You know, as you're talking about this, my designer hops on. I'm thinking, you know, if it was a wine, you know, could you take the grapes, you know, the extract that comes from that, and, you know, can you use that as a dye for your, you know, to create color or to, you know, incorporate into there? Or if it's a fragrance, and let's say there's rose petals in that happen in there, could you then take that and place that into the molded fiber to create some kind of scent?
We want to try it. We want to try it. For sure.
Yeah, like that's the coolest thing, right? It's like you have a complete, you've got a blank sheet essentially when you're working with ColorForm.
Yeah, what you said before was, and thank you for it, when you were saying we're leading it and we are pushing the boundaries. I can't remember the exact word you used, but thank you for saying that, because we do want to be met with a challenge. We use the word a lot. We like the challenge. It's what we thrive upon.
Yeah, it's almost the worst thing for Chris is that if someone comes to him and says, I've got it here. Can you just make this one, please? Whereas actually, we don't want to do that. What we want to do is challenge each other and see what happens, see what comes out of the process.
That's awesome, guys. I'm super excited to see what you guys come up with next. I was so excited to get this sample because I've been seeing it everywhere. I was really bummed that I didn't get a bottle.
Sorry, we couldn't send you the bottle.
Next time.
Keep watching this space. It's
yeah, there's plenty of stuff coming. We just can't talk about it just yet.
Yeah. No, that's great, guys. I really appreciate it. I think the last point I want to make, anybody listening to this and is interested in reaching out to Colorform, definitely contact them. But also from a color standpoint, because you're working with Cropper and Colorform, and let's say that your insert is a specific blue, you're able to make the paper to wrap the box in match that color because it's all under the same roof. So you can have a yellow box or a blue box, whatever your brand color is, have the insert inside match identically because it's all made in the same place. All those materials are coming from the same place. So it's a great opportunity to create some really cool, seamless type of packaging.
Yeah, that's right. We've had some projects where we're working with both paper and Colorform, and that works well. Yeah, absolutely right.
I'm sure, I spoke to Vincent Villager on his development of the gabardine textured paper texture and how he worked with James Cropper. So I'm assuming if your brand has a custom texture that's being applied to the paper, but you can apply a similar texture that matches to your pulp.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the answer is yes. Yeah. As long as it fits the process of material, yes, general answer is yes, we can do that and find a way.
Yeah, and that's great. So again, options are limitless when working with a company like Colorform. I think it's really cool, guys. Thank you so much, Chris, and thank you so much, Richard, for hopping on here with me. If anybody wants to contact you directly, what is the best place for them to do so?
I guess the website, our website, or Richard Dancy, D-A-N for November, C-Y on LinkedIn, you can find me. And I guess the same with Chris.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. I'll have links to everything in the show notes, to Colorform, to James Cropper, to your LinkedIn. And thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you being on here. That's it for the show. Thanks so much for joining us on Package Design Unboxed. If you have any questions, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm always available for questions. Once again, check us out at packagedesignunboxed.com.